London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. London's premier forum for news, views, and up-to-date information. Here's Andy Udman.
For the correct way to eat is not a belief, a theory, an opinion, or a supposition. They are biochemical facts. What if I were to say that type 2 diabetes was completely curable, treatable, preventable with simple dietary guidelines? Would you believe me? I see it every day in my practice. Total cost, direct and indirect, of diabetes, $174 billion.
I can't tell you how excited I am to talk to this doctor this morning. Even if you care less how long you live, even if you care less how fat you get or how healthy you are not, just look at it from a financial point of view. We have governments all over North America, and especially the West, going bankrupt because of their health bills. They haven't got a clue what to do. If they just listen to our next guest, they could save not millions, but billions, if not more. Pam Colleen in studio this morning. She's brought another guest. And is he going to rock the boat or what, Pam?
He will. And he's a marvelous gentleman. And he's written a book that I think will really improve our state of health today throughout all of North America in the Western world. So
let me read the title.
Yeah.
What a title.
It's
for
a great title.
Genocide: How Your Doctor's Dietary Ignorance Will Kill You. Can you believe that title? Genocide: How Your Doctor's Dietary Ignorance Will Kill You. I mean, this guy is the definition of chutzpah.
Mm-hmm.
He's got gall. Mm-hmm. I mean, just that clip off the top about mm-hmm. diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
We could save in the U.S., yeah, he's talking, billions of dollars by simply getting people to change what they put in their mouth.
Mostly what he's got is common sense. I mean, he's a board-certified family physician. He has degrees coming out of his yin-yang. He's got an MBA, degrees in biochemistry, cellular physiology. He's got a law degree. This man has done his research, but most importantly, he has been able to cut through a lot of muck and find out, you know, how to be healthy through common sense.
I watched one of his videos online this morning at the National Press Club in Washington. And I'm going to ask him about this, pounding himself on the head for that moment when he had an epiphany. And he was saying exactly what you're saying. In spite of all our sophisticated medicine and all our sophisticated research, people today are sicker, fatter, and more depressed than they've ever been.
Yeah, so he decided to do the opposite from what our dietary dictocrats are telling us to do, and he got healthy.
And then, this is the part I want to ask him about, he experimented on his family. Dr. James Carlson, and I won't even begin to rhyme off all your degrees. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much.
I loved watching your videos this morning.
Thank you.
You have to learn not to hit yourself on the forehead so hard, but I love the mea culpa that you gave us when you discovered as a doctor that you were full of baloney.
As a doctor, I finally figured out that I was profoundly ignorant. Profoundly ignorant about the correct way to eat. And like I said at the press conference, you know, I was 70 pounds heavier, high blood pressure, my lipid profile was in the toilet, I had high triglycerides, a low HDL, that's your good cholesterol, my sugar was, you know, creeping upward. Of course, I was obese. And I did to myself what I had done to thousands upon thousands of patients that, you know, before. I went on low fat, low cholesterol, and I got fatter and sicker. And my numbers, you know, did not improve, and I wound up on a blood pressure medication, a cholesterol medicine du jour, whatever it was at the time. And it wasn't until I came across a book espousing the importance of carbohydrate avoidance, that is sugar avoidance, that I began to understand the correct way to eat. And I was listening at the beginning, and right, this is an understanding, see? This is not a belief, a theory, a supposition, or an opinion of mine. These are basic nutritional biochemical facts as the correct way to eat. Now, you did start mentioning about costs of health care and whatnot. And it's interesting because just a couple of minutes before, you know, I arrived on the scene here, I was doing some other costs. And basically, I came up, and in North America, we're spending $1.6 trillion a year because we don't understand the correct way to eat. And total costs are $2.6 trillion. If doctors, and I would say the government, because I'm poking fingers at the government. I'm coming out with both guns blaring here, and I'm pointing fingers. And I'm saying if the government understood the correct way to eat, we would save 62% of healthcare costs. 62%.
But we have food guides here, and in both Canada and in the United States, and these are supposed to be scientific. They are supposed to be coming from experts. And you did a wonderful press conference in Washington, D.C., basically as a rebuttal to the recent USDA food guidelines. Can you talk about that?
I can, and it was for the 2010 USDA dietary guidelines. Now, I guess this is kind of showing how, you know, bass-ackwards, excuse my French, you know, our government is. 2010 USDA dietary guidelines, we're talking about them in 2011? I didn't get it. But anyway, the 2010 USDA dietary guidelines, what people need to understand is that these guidelines are created behind closed doors. Behind closed doors. With individuals who don't understand the correct way to eat. They're just progressing the dietary ignorance and allowing it to perpetuate. So this is behind closed doors deliberation of what they think is the correct
way to eat. Or what the lobby groups want, essentially. It's essentially the four lobby groups. It's not the four food groups.
I'm going to have to agree. So you got your 2010 USDA dietary guidelines who created, basically, USDA created the food pyramid, say, right? But, oh, wait, no, we want to make it simpler because we're stupid as lay people, so we got to make it simpler. So the first lady created this My Plate campaign, which is the food pyramid, dressed up. I mean, it's just disguised. It's a facade. And you have a big plate and you got a little plate. It's called the My Plate campaign, all right? And basically, it's still an over-preponderance. It's an over, consumption of carbohydrates. The big plate has, your whole grains and all this jazz and your fruit, and the little tiny plate next to it has, the fat, because you're not supposed to eat fat because that's bad for you, right? Well, when my patients eat more fat, cholesterol, and protein, they get thinner, their blood pressure's normalized, their blood sugar's normalized, I can go on and on. Suffice it to say, I don't really need to use medications all that much in my practice. But the USDA 2010 dietary guidelines are just plain wrong. And the My Plate campaign, which is basically, again, the food pyramid disguised, is just plain wrong. I like to thank our government in America for helping to make our nation fatter and sicker. Oh, but wait, it gets better because the pharmaceutical companies get to make trillions of dollars to fly around in nice little fancy jets. So, we need to start understanding the correct way to eat.
Let me ask you, Dr. Carlson, just to tap into a story that's in the news. We have had now another hockey player who has been found dead, and we've had a string of hockey players and other athletes suffering from depression. In just a moment, I want to ask you, and I want to switch channels and go to the whole notion, even if someone's not interested in the health benefits of what you're saying, strictly the financial crisis that we're facing in terms of paying the bills. And one significant chapter in that book is the whole fight against depression, which we seem to be losing.
Correct. Depression, very interesting you mentioned depression, because as your total cholesterol, I'm going to relate it to, of course, what I see in clinical practice and what the studies show, as your total cholesterol drops below 180, that's the total cholesterol drops below 180, we actually see what's known as all-cause mortality increasing. Now, all-cause mortality means is that deaths from any cause increase. And one of those, believe it or not, a depression goes up. We see increased depression, but we see increased rate of suicide in individuals with total cholesterol below 180. Now, they don't give you a reason, but, I can give my expert opinion as to what I think is happening.
Do that.
And it makes perfect sense to me, because if you look at the brain, which is fundamental in mental health, okay? It's fundamental. That goes without saying. If you look at the constituency of the brain is made up of what? Fat, mainly fat, and, of course, cholesterol is within every cell. So if you're dropping your total cholesterol levels, and if you're not eating the fat like you're told not to, you're not nourishing the brain. You're not giving the brain what it needs to function properly. So, of course, you're going to see more depression and spin-off anxiety, bipolar, obsessive-compulsive, attention deficit activity, hyperactivity disorder. These things are running rampant in North America. But we're pushing this low-fat, low-cholesterol. We're not allowing the brain to get what it needs for proper health and physiology. And that's why you're seeing an increase, a suicide rate when you drop your total cholesterol. And it goes to say, too, with the cholesterol-lowering medications. Because a lot of these people, they're pushing people, meaning cardiologists, nutritionists and doctors, family docs and the like. They're pushing this total cholesterol lower and lower and lower with these so-called statin agents. And, you know, this is, and we're seeing more illness. We're seeing more mental health problems.
Doctor, let me ask you a provocative question just before we go to the break. What fraction of the patients who are in our mental hospitals or who are dealing with mental issues, and what fraction of the prisoners in our prisons are there facing an issue which relates to nutrition? In other words, if they had had proper nutrition, what fraction of them would not be in the fix they're in?
You want me to answer that now? I have the answer.
Give me the answer, if you will.
All right. If you look at how, and I'm not picking on any gender here, but if you look at how, you know, women, and I got to say that women tend to be smarter than men, all right? I'm not picking on the guys. I'm just saying, you know, what I see in clinical practice. Smart in the sense that they want to read. They want to learn. They want to know what's healthy or not healthy or what the opinion is. So now you have a mom, an expectant mom, who was eating low-fat, low-cholesterol before she got pregnant. Now she's eating low-fat, low-cholesterol during the pregnancy. Now the baby is born, and unfortunately in North America we have a horrible, horrendous rate of breastfeeding. In other words, it's very, very low. So now the babies aren't being nourished after they're born, and now the babies are being given this low-fat, low-cholesterol baby formula stuff. My point is this. Central nervous system development occurs, you know, almost, you know, immediately upon fertilization of that egg by that sperm, okay? So now when that baby's central nervous system is developing throughout the gestational period, after the mom gives birth, and during the 4, 5, 6, 7 years of brain development, you're not going to have proper connections made, proper brain development. Why do we think we're seeing increased rates of autism here in North America? It's the same reason. Neglecting genetic, issues here, genetic variations, I would say nutrition, the improper nutrition or nutrition in general, has a huge role, a huge influence on the prison situation or the mental health institutional situation.
I agree.
Okay. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back with Dr. Carlson. We want to ask him, how much could we save? You will be staggered by his answer. How much could we save if we just got people to eat 3 square meals and get them to lay off the sugar? You'll be astounded at the figures in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
For the correct way to eat is not a belief, a theory, an opinion, or a supposition. They are biochemical facts. Let's add those figures up, shall we? So I did that, and that's, you know, I can't do that in my head right now under the pressure here. So with $762 billion that could be saved, or close that could be saved, by basically treating patients or suggesting to patients the correct way to eat. I believe the current healthcare costs are $2.6 to $2.7 trillion. Do the math. This comes out to about 26% of healthcare costs. The big buzzword around Washington is change. We want change. Let's go get change. You want change? Listen to the correct way to eat.
See, I'm imagining that Barack Obama is listening to this on the internet, and that line that's lighting up right now is him reaching us to say, who is this Dr. Carlson, and how audacious of him to pretend that he can save all this money when I can't. Dr. Carlson, I'm being slightly facetious, but let's just look at the financial crisis that we have right now in America, and here in Canada, we're right behind you, when it comes to paying medical bills, and how close we are to falling off the cliff trying to pay those bills.
It's crazy. Again, we're having the same issues here in America. You know, let me just add that when I was given those that data down in Washington, what I didn't add to my figure was the $800 million that the National Institutes of Health spends on obesity research per year. That's $800 million. So now when you add that to the $762 billion, you come up with $1.6 trillion. And if you use $2.6 trillion as your healthcare cost, that comes to 62%. The $1.6 trillion is 62% of the healthcare cost, a lot of which can be just eliminated by eating the correct way. And, you know, right, so President Obama is sitting there going, well, what makes, you know, this Dr. Carlson smarter than me? Well, I'm not. I understand the correct way to eat. I have my niche. But the problem we're having, it's a huge problem, it's disease, it's obesity. And that just happens to be my niche, that just happens to be what I understand.
But these are modern diseases, these are new to mankind. I mean, we've never seen this before in our history.
We have not. And if you look at timelines, you know, a progression of disease and the ever-increasing prevalence of heart disease, which continues to be the number one killer of both men and women in North America, it parallels the diminished consumption of fat and cholesterol in our foods. So if anybody thinks that low cholesterol is the correct way to eat, just look at the easily generated statistical data, you know, and match your plots, and you'll see a direct relationship between low-fat, low cholesterol, an increase in obesity, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and something called GERD, which is a big way of saying heartburn, where in 2005 we spent $2 billion a week in heartburn, which can be almost completely eliminated by backing off on carbs.
Doctor, I have to ask you this question. We're coming down to the bottom of the hour. We have to take a short news break, but I want to ask you this question. There's an old expression, there is none so blind as he who will not see, none so deaf as he who will not hear. Why aren't they listening? This is so fundamental. It is so basic. If you got America, if you got Canada to eat right, our health bills, which are soaring, would turn around. You have the evidence for that, and yet they're not listening. Why is that?
Well, I'm going to throw a quote right back at you. What I love: men occasionally stumble over the truth, but most of them pick themselves up and hurry off as if nothing had happened. Winston Churchill, another quote I love. And we have known about, you know, backing off on carbs and preventing disease, you know, for at the turn of the century. We knew about it. There was something called banting. It was called banting, you know, backing off on the carbs. You know, these diseases, you know, are running rampant. And, you know, after I said that quote to you, right below it, there's a study in the New England Journal of Medicine, its July 17, 2008 article, which looked at low carbs and how effective low carbs were. And I'm sorry, I forgot your question because I was thinking of that quote when you asked it.
Okay, we're just about to go to a news break. Run down what you're asking us to give up or at least cut back on. I see a list here, and I'm saying, Doctor, why is it? It's like God is cruel. All the things we love the most, you're saying we should eat less of: bread, sugar, flour, juice, grains, fruits, vegetables. Those are your hit list?
My hit lists are bread, pasta, rice, corn, carrots, potatoes, cereals, fruits, fruit juices, beets, cakes, and candies. I tell my patients, do not worship whole grains, multigrains, seven grains, whole wheat pasta, brown rice, fruit, yogurt. And it's interesting you said something about God, because, God, way back when in the Garden of Eden, was showing us not to eat fruit, because what was tempted? What was tempted? The apple. So that was the way of God telling us not to eat that stuff. All right. Of course, I'm being a little sardonic with that, but, you know, those are the foods to avoid. And the foods we should eat, of course, are the meat, red meat, lamb, pork, chicken with the skin, fish, eggs, including the yolk, cheeses, cold cuts, green leafy vegetables, butter is better, and mayonnaise is fine.
I always tell people just stay away from those middle aisles. And, really what we should be doing is putting warning labels on a lot of those foods in the middle aisles of the grocery store.
And those are the foods that, you know, I know here one major supermarket has a little clover leaf, whatever it is, indicating that it's healthy to eat. And these are a lot of the low-fat things and the multigrain things, saying, oh, look, this is safe to eat. But these are the things that are encouraging. What am I talking about? They're creating the obesity and all the other disease processes and this disease pandemic.
Doctor, you know what I would love? I would pay for this to happen. We're going to invite a London doctor who's hearing this to react to Dr. James Carlson, author of the book Genocide, How Your Doctor's Dietary Ignorance Will Kill You. You have to promise me you'll keep this answer to 5 seconds, doctor. What do most doctors know about nutrition?
Nothing.
Thank you. We'll be back with Dr. James Carlson in just a moment. Right here on London Today on News Talk 1290, CJBK. Doctor, you know what I would love? I would pay for this to happen. We're going to invite a London doctor who's hearing this to react to Dr. James Carlson, author of the book Genocide, How Your Doctor's Dietary Ignorance Will Kill You. You have to promise me you'll keep this answer to 5 seconds, doctor. What do most doctors know about nutrition?
Nothing.
Thank you. There's an answer.
Yeah.
Politicians will never do that. I mean, but Dr. James Carlson, This is an incredible interview. It just absolutely blows me away, the courage of Dr. James Carlton, who's written a book, if you've just joined us, a book called How Your Doctor's Dietary Ignorance Will Kill You. Pam, you were just saying a fascinating thing before we get back to Dr. Carlson a couple of moments ago. You do these nutritional boot camps. You talk to a lot of doctors and nurses. Well, they're people too.
Right.
And they have hearts and lungs and other body organs.
And they have sick family members too.
And you're saying their families are sick and they're doctors and they don't know what to do.
That's right. And they're frustrated by the system. So I hate to entirely blame the doctors because we have a very, very dysfunctional system, you know, from the top down. So one thing that I was mentioning to you in the break, though, was this terrible decision on behalf of President Clinton to become a vegan. I did a radio show on it the other day, and I'd like to invite Dr. Carlson to inform President Clinton what is the preferred fuel for the heart, Dr. Carlson?
For the heart is basically free fatty acids. Preferred fuel for the heart, known as the myocardium, the heart, for the kidneys, something known as the renal cortex, all right, that's the kidney, for the skeletal muscle, free fatty acids. But let me also take this a step further, because most doctors would incorrectly state that, oh, glucose is the preferred sugar molecule or fuel molecule for the brain. Wrong. Ketone bodies are. And why is that important? Because we just said free fatty acids, these are facts, that free fatty acids are the preferred fuel molecules for the heart, the kidneys, all right, and the skeletal muscle. What do you think the breakdown products are of free fatty acids? Lo and behold, ketone bodies. Do you think that's an accident? No. It's an evolutionary thing. So when I said that doctors don't know, or when I said, when you asked me what do doctors know about nutrition, and I said nothing, that's entirely accurate. There are doctors out there who do understand the correct way to eat. And notice again, the word I'm using is understand. I don't believe anything. I have opinions, of course, but I don't believe what I'm saying is true. I know it's true. And I feel sorry for any physician who takes your challenge and wants to debate with me, because they better go and review their biochemistry textbooks, because we're going back to the basic fundamentals of biochemistry. They better relearn something called glycolysis and pyruvate and acetyl coenzyme A and acetyl carboxylase coenzyme A. They better relearn HMG coenzyme A reductase. I don't mean to lose the listeners here with fancy schmancy, you know, talk here, but you know, the physicians got to be very, very careful when they debate with me, because when you come armed with the truth, that is such a strength. And I give lectures to physicians all the time, and their ignorance turns into arrogance, and it's like they want to beat me up. And I'm like, guys, I'm just, and gals, I'm just giving you the correct nutritional information. But you see, that's what happens when you attack
But that's called cognitive dissonance. In psychology, they call it cognitive dissonance. And people, unfortunately, don't want to feel duped. They don't want to feel conned. They're too proud to have been lied to.
Or given the correct information. And if you hold on to a strict belief, all right, it's very hard to change a belief. But you see what happened with me. I went through a whole big transition. And when I started understanding the correct way to eat, much to my chagrin, I mean, I was embarrassed, kind of, sort of, you know. And I went back to my patients after telling them for years, low-fat, low-cholesterol, low-fat, low-cholesterol. And then I go back after losing all this weight and coming off my medications. I go, you know, when I told you about low-fat, low-cholesterol being the right, well, I was wrong. You know, you need to eat more fat, cholesterol, and protein. Now, most of my patients, when I sat them down and discussed logically why I'm saying that and telling them that, they understood. They go, wow, that makes perfect sense. And if I may, let me just speak some facts. Let me speak some facts. Okay?
Go for it.
And the cholesterol and fat that clogs our arteries, coronary arteries notwithstanding, that cholesterol and fat starts, the creation of that cholesterol and fat starts with a glucose and a fructose molecule, sugar. Fructose comes from fruit. And glucose comes from your whole grains and whatnot. It comes from your cakes and your candies. Nobody would argue with eating that. That's wrong. But I get very, very stern arguments about whole grains and multigrains and the yogurts. But all they're providing you with is sugar, glucose and fructose. Glucose and fructose are the starting points for cholesterol and fatty acid creation. They're the starting points. Anybody want to argue with me, go right ahead. Because I will sit you down and I'll put the biochemistry textbook in front of you, assuming you have a biochemical background, and I will show you the distinct interlocking biochemical pathways from where you start with glucose, fructose, and you end up with cholesterol and fat. The very foods that do not contain cholesterol or fat are the very foods our body uses to make cholesterol and fat. Let me say that one more time for the listeners. The very foods that do not contain cholesterol or fat are the very foods our bodies use to make cholesterol and fat.
And that makes complete sense, because over the last 50 to 60 years, as we've been increasing our consumption of carbohydrates and reducing our consumption of fat and cholesterol, we see more heart disease. We see more health problems as a whole.
Absolutely. Now, there's an interesting thing. I was reviewing some statistics a couple of days ago, and they actually made a statement that the mortality from heart disease is decreasing, right? So it was like 100,000 cases less this year. But I don't want the listeners to be misled by that, because the reason it's decreasing is because we're developing novel medicines, all right, and we're becoming more accustomed to treating heart disease because we're seeing so much of it. So people don't take the chance. They have a little twinge of chest pain. They're running to the ER. They're getting treated appropriately. Why do we understand so much about it? Why can we create these medications? Because you're seeing so much of the disease that you're becoming more accustomed to it. So don't let that mortality drop fool anybody.
Doctor, take us to our local restaurant and apply all of what you just said to what we're actually going to choose when we go to a restaurant this evening and make our choices. Based on what we think are the foods that boost our cholesterol levels and our fat levels, and in other words, the foods that we should be going for instead of the foods that we are going for.
Hey, absolutely. I'll do a little twist on it, too. For breakfast, you go to your local pancake cottage, and people hear pancake. Oh, my goodness, you can't eat. Doc, you're saying we can eat. No. You go to your pancake house. Most pancakes, cottages or whatever they're called, will have omelets. So, you know, I would choose an omelet, ham and cheese, usually with a side order of sausage. Now, when people sit down and they have an omelet, usually what they'll do incorrectly is order an egg white omelet with whole grain toast or a waffle, thinking that if there's any problems, it's going to derive from the eggs and not the toast. They're blaming the wrong things for, you know, the heart issues. Lunch, you know, lunch is very interesting. So you go to your Subway or your local deli, and you order a hero, and you stay away from, because you think the roast beef, you know, is bad for you, or the liverwurst is bad for you, and you get it on the whole grain bun, thinking that's negating everything. No, it's actually the bun or the hero bread that you're eating that is more dangerous. That roast beef and that liverwurst is going a long way to increase your longevity, increase your health. Now, dinner, the easiest meal of the day, you know, when you sit down and have your steak, you're going to have your potatoes. You're going to have your corn, and you're going to have your whole wheat bread.
And the potato should be loaded up with some butter and high-fat sour cream, right?
Absolutely. And eat the butter and the sour cream. Don't eat the potatoes. But, you know, when you have a heart problem or high blood pressure, the doctor will go, oh, well, you're eating too much in the way of steak, or you're eating too much in the way of eggs, or you're eating too much roast beef. And they'll blame the wrong food, you know, for the disease process, not understanding everything is really 180 degrees from what we understand.
Doctor, tell me about the moment when you had the epiphany and you realized you were selling snake oil. You'd been misinformed by all those smart people in medical school. When was the moment when you looked in the mirror and you said, I've been an idiot?
Oh, man, that eureka moment was also, there's a lot of other superlatives, which I can't say on the air. I was very angry with myself. My heart sank. I was depressed, you know, because by that time I was like 5 years into clinical practice. And I was also chief resident of my family medicine residency, which meant that I instructed, you know, the students, third and fourth year, the interns and other residents. Fellows, I instructed them, you know, nutritionally, and I was giving them the wrong information. That was probably one of my deepest, darkest moments. But, you know, coupled with that, I've always been a very positive individual. I always try to find the positive in anything. And I said to myself, thank goodness that I understand this, all right, now, because now I can go forward. I can go forward with this. But, you know, my undergraduate training in biochemistry and molecular cellular biology was at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. This is a premier institution. So you would think that would come out, you know, understanding, you know, maybe better than other people because of the university. But I didn't. I remember giving a lecture to nutritionists, and one nutritionist sitting in the front was from New York University, a very prestigious university. And he looked at me. He didn't know my undergraduate training. He looked at me and he slapped himself on the forehead, which is exactly what I did, and made me laugh. It made the whole audience laugh. And he goes, darn it. And I went to NYU, and they didn't teach me anything. And I looked at him. I said, really? Well, I went to Cornell, and I learned nothing about that either. So, you know, you really have to be taught the correct way.
Okay, doctor, you said you talk to doctors all the time, and they get angry, and they think you're an idiot. There must have been one or two or three or four who sort of motioned for you to go in a little room so they could close the door and say, you know what? I've just had an epiphany. Have you had some of those?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've had actually, on the counter, the swing side of that, I've had people get up and leave the room, disgusted at what I was saying, thinking I was so utterly wrong. But yes, people have come, doctors have come up to me, as have nutritionists and dietitians. They have come up to me and said, you're right. I can't even, because I remember that pathway, and I remember that, and they were all interconnected. And how could I have been so ignorant? And I look at them, I go, but now you're not. Now you're not.
I'll be looking, by the way, for this book in my doctor's office foyer. The book is called Genocide, How Your Doctor's Dietary Ignorance Will Kill You. Doctor, when you throw stones, as you are in this book, usually the people you're throwing stones at will throw some back. What's the biggest one that's been thrown back at you?
You know, it's funny. I can't say any, because, again, you know, when people just generally leave, you know, they'll hurl insults, things like that. I'm incapable of being insulted, so that doesn't bother me at all. But I really haven't had any direct lash backs, because, you know what, again, I'm armed with the truth, and when I sit people down and I go through the biochemical pathways, they go, oh, my God, you know, they understand it for what it is, and it's the truth. It's nutritional biochemical truism.
Doctor, hold that thought. We're starting to get calls from our listeners now because they want to get in on this conversation. Let's go to Dave. Dave, go ahead.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Good.
Big question. A lot of people who play sports, a lot of times we hear that you're supposed to eat a meal high in carbs the night before you play sports to build up the energy, and then after the game you have a meal high in protein to help build up the muscle. What do you have to say about that?
It's incorrect, Dave. I know that there's a lot of it's called carb loading and all. I was actually a competitive bodybuilder, you know, many years ago. So we used to do that, you know, a little bit as well, before competing. But it's called carb loading. Eat a lot, you know, food high in carbohydrates before. Now the protein part of it is correct. All right, after. But I deal with a lot of athletes as well, and when I get them down on the carbs and have them increase their fatty consumption, they actually excel and they perform much better. But let's look at physiologically what goes on in say, the muscles, the leg muscles of, say, a marathon runner or anybody who's doing a stamina sport. Could be cycling, could be swimming, right? Well, you have the stored fuel known as glycogen within the skeletal muscle, you know, and, of course, within the liver. Those glycogen stores with, you know, people who are very competitive are used up at about 15 to 20 minutes, maybe a half hour. Now, if we didn't have a secondary source, which is really the primary source, but if we didn't have a secondary source for fuel, we'd drop. We'd be done. You know what that secondary source of fuel is? Free fatty acids. Have you ever heard of the term, what's the term they use? The runner's high, but you know, breaking through the wall. I forget what the saying is. That transition from when you're feeling great to when you're feeling like crap, all right, and then you're feeling great again, all right, that's when your body's converting from glycogen to free fatty acids for fuel. The carb loading comes with it, you know, big problems, because it doesn't take much in the way of carbs to fill up your glycogen stores in the liver and the skeletal muscle. But what do you think is going to happen with the excess carbohydrates that are not stored as glycogen in skeletal muscle and liver? They're going to be created, they're going to be stored in the form of fat, adipose tissue, and you're also going to make cholesterol molecules out of that.
Doctor, make it simple. What should the London Knights, our prized hockey team here in London, sit down and eat just before the big game?
Before the big game, I want a nice juicy steak, all right, with buttercream smeared all over it. You know, I want a nice protein shake, all right. Certainly, you can have carbs. Now, your competitive athletes aren't going to be as low carb-wise for somebody with a disease. Now, somebody with heart, you know, obesity, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, they're going to have around 20 to 30 grams of carbs per day. My competitive athletes, I keep around 100, 120. They're a little higher, and they need to be. but, you know, and a little tiny thing of maybe some whole grain pasta or whatnot. And why am I saying whole grains? Wasn't I picking on whole grains? Well, because it's got a little more fiber in it, so it's a little less in carbs. But I'm not talking a large amount. I'm talking a little amount.
Okay,
but
we have to leave it there. We're trying to get more of these calls on. Sandra, go ahead. Sandra, what's your question?
Yes, doctor. You mentioned that free fatty acids and ketones were good for the heart. And I wondered if you could give me some examples of what foods you would get those in.
Well, free fatty acids are broken down into the ketones, which is good for the brain, and the free fatty acids were good for the heart. Basically, it's in the foods you think you can eat. Like, say, I don't eat lean meat. I get meat with most with a lot of fat in it, like the ribeyes and all that. I eat a lot of butter. I eat a lot of mayonnaise. I eat a lot of cheeses. I eat a lot of, in the way of macadamia nuts and things that most people would run away from, pork rinds. So that would be just a nice little example of what you should be eating.
Thank you, Sandra, for the call. Let's go to Lori. Lori, go ahead.
Yeah, doctor, I just have a question. Cutting out, like, all those carbs and whatever, I don't argue with that point at all. I dropped sugar about 3 years ago, dropped 40 pounds in 2 months. But my question is more related to the bowel, like, in relation to, like, colorectal cancer, eating all those meats and everything. Don't you need those carbs and those fibers to scrape the bowels clean?
Great question. First off, your bowels are self-cleaning. So this whole bowel cleansing, you know, stuff is a waste of your time. Your bowels are self-cleaning. The second thing is we've done numerous studies. One was a study consisting of over 80,000 individuals where we looked at different fiber intakes. Group 1 had the least. Group 5 had the most. Because the most common thing we hear of with fiber, we say, oh, the more fiber you eat, the lower your risk for colon cancer. Well, in this study that had 80,000-plus participants, we found no difference in colon cancer rates or prevalences between all five groups. So this really puts that whole colon cancer, you know, fiber, you know, into question.
Okay, and honestly, on a diet like that, so high in red meat and stuff, pardon my boldness, but how does it affect your, you know, your daily bathroom routines and stuff?
A lot of people, well, that's a great question, too, because a lot of people will come to me, patients, and I'll say, doctor, I'm constipated. And I'll look at them and go, what do you mean? Well, I haven't pooped in 3 or 4 days. And I go, okay, how do you feel? I feel great. Okay, because what the common person thinks is constipation is not pooping every day. But let's look at what stool really is. Stool is waste. It's waste. So the more times you poop throughout the day, the more waste you're creating, see? So when you're eating more efficiently with the fat, cholesterol, and protein and less in the way of carbs, you create less waste, and waste in this case is your poop.
Right.
Lori, appreciate it, and hats off to you for losing all that weight.
Okay, thanks.
Terrific. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with Rick, who's been waiting patiently, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Doctor, you know what I would love? I would just love, I would pay for this to happen. We're going to invite a London doctor who's hearing this to react to Dr. James Carlson, author of the book Genocide, How Your Doctor's Dietary Ignorance Will Kill You. You have to promise me you'll keep this answer to 5 seconds, doctor. What do most doctors know about nutrition?
Nothing.
Thank you.
I'm going to be chuckling about that for days. Rick, you've been waiting patiently. Your questioner, you're the last caller we can squeeze in here. Go for
it. Okay, quick question, Dr. Carlson. I'm diabetic, too, and I am on low carbs. Is there anything else I should be doing different from what they're telling me?
Now, you're type 2 diabetic?
Yes.
Okay. Basically, can I ask quickly what medications you're taking for the diabetes?
Metformin. That's about the only thing I'm taking.
All right. That's a very safe product. That doesn't lower blood sugars like the others. That's a safe product to be on. Basically, I tell my type 2 diabetics two things. Number one, get yourself a copy of the book by Richard K. Bernstein called The Diabetes Solution. Richard K. Bernstein, The Diabetes Solution. And try to keep your carbs at no more than 10 grams of carbs per meal. 10 grams of carbs per meal. Metformin's a great, it's a very good product, all right? I'll oftentimes use that with my type 2s, but, you know, if you're doing the low carbs, watch out for the things the American Diabetes Association says, or the Canadian Diabetes Association, I don't know what they say, but they generally have you eating too much in the way of carbs. They tell you whole grains are good for you, the fruits are natural sugars.
Doctor, yeah. I have to get this question in. How did the doctors get so ill-informed? How did they get so stupid?
They got so ill-informed because they're still holding on tenaciously to the incorrect belief that, you know, whole grains and multigrains are good for you and cholesterol and fat are bad for you. And if I have a chance, it's called a priori reasoning, and it goes something like this. If I'm standing out at the beach looking out at the horizon is flat. Oh, I got it. The world is flat. All right? Now, here's that, and we know that's not true. So here's that applied to nutrition. If my cholesterol is elevated in my blood, if I'm overweight or I have high triglycerides or fats in my blood, then it must be because I'm overeating cholesterol and fatty-containing foods.
Doctor, give us your website.
www.drjamescarlson.com.
You've hit it out of the park, my friend. Keep up the good work.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, Dr. Carlson.
Wow.
That was amazing.
He's amazing.
Yes. They should be, the medical schools should be inviting him to come and speak all around North America.
The book is called Genocide, How Your Doctor's Dietary Ignorance Will Kill You. Thanks, Pam.
Thank you so much, Andy.
What an hour. 11 o'clock news just around the corner. Please hang up and drive so you arrive alive and you could enjoy this whole month of September starting today. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 9 right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.